We are the space robots. We are here to protect you. Back, Chewie, us. Back, Chewie, us. Back, Chewie, us.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pusher Robot.
And this is the Shover Robot.
And we are here to protect you from the terrible secret of space.
Terrible
secrets of near space this week.
Yes, cislunar space, perhaps even.
Very close, very close. If you haven't gotten the memo, we're here to talk to you about the moon and some things about why people should be living on the moon, maybe aren't living on the moon. Maybe there are Nazis on the moon. I don't know. Popular media. Just ignore me.
There are no Nazis on the moon. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right. So the moon is pretty much awesome. It's our closest celestial neighbor. You look up in the sky and you see it every day or night.
Sometimes.
Except on the new moons. Or if it's a cloudy day, if you live in Seattle or something weird like that, you never see the sky at night.
Something weird.
I'm sorry if you're from Seattle. I don't mind to offend. It's just sad that you can't see the sky at night all the time. But I digress. So the moon is probably one of my most favorite topics because I, in all sincerity, hope to one day return to the moon. I think that the moon is probably our best bet for getting mankind up into space and then using that as a springboard for further resource utilization and further exploration and just science in general. It's been something I've been studying for quite some time. So, yeah, pretty excited to be able to talk about that today.
Yeah, so we won't go into too big of a history of the moon. Obviously, the leading theory is that it was blasted off of Earth after the proto-Earth collided by... Something hit us. Something about Mars size hit us. Crammed off a chunk of matter, probably crust material, that orbited us for a while until it eventually condensed into the moon that we know and love today. And it has been something that humanity as a whole has had its sights set on for as long as we've been around, either fearing it as a deity or in modern times thinking of it as the first hurdle into space. And so that brings us to the first topic we want to talk about is why do we want to go to the moon so badly? First off, it's very near the Earth. So if we are going to go to space, that's probably the first stop, since it's pretty easy to get some aid up there, at least relatively easy to get aid up there if something goes horribly wrong. And not that the first NASA missions, at least the mission ideas of send an astronaut to the moon and then send him aid till we can figure out how to get him back kind of ideal was working out. But in modern times, it's a lot easier to get things to and from space.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And It's because it's so close, too, that gives us the big benefit there. As far as Delta V is concerned, which is the energy that you need to get up and around in space, considering you've already gotten to low Earth orbit, because once you're there, you're halfway to anything, the moon is pretty easy to get to, relatively speaking, though. You can go to the Martian moons with less Delta V than you use to go to our moon, although you have to use very specific orbital trajectories and transfers. And it's not very convenient, and it's not something you can do very quickly. Whereas with relatively low and efficient engines, low thrust and efficient engines, you can get to the moon within 3 days without having to use, some crazy technology. Whereas if you wanted to go to Mars, say, that's going to take you on the order of 3 months. It's just about 60 days on the low end using some high thrust. But anyway... So you get there and it's close. What does that do for you? Well, it allows you, one, to be able to communicate with Earth pretty effectively. You've only got about a 10-second lag between the Earth and the moon as far as the speed of light's concerned. So, you can use robotic systems pretty effectively. You can communicate. If you need help, you can use you're right there with ground control, relatively speaking. On top of that, the moon is... a wonderful springboard. You can go there, and now you have yourself a lot of in situ resources, which are available to you for building stuff in space for use in space. And so you don't have to take it out of the Earth, and that's a huge expensive process. because of just the gravitational field, darn that gravity. Or on the moon, launching it into space from the lunar surface could be as simple as using, you could use your propellant and go the railgun route or a mass driver, or you could just use local resources to fuel your rockets, take them up into low lunar orbit, and then put them into downgrade orbit to the Earth, and then use aerobraking to end back up on the Earth. Or if you're trying to go even further out into space, once you pretty much get up into low lunar orbit, you can get back into a Earth-centered orbit, and then from there, just adding energy, off you go. But it's much easier to move resources to and from the lunar surface than it is by a very large factor between the Earth and low Earth orbit.
See, Trevor, I knew this would be a problem. If I got you talking about the moon, you would talk for days about it. But no, your insight is well appreciated. So as far as the sense of scale is concerned, the moon is 3.7 times 10 to the 7th square kilometers, which is about 1 times 10 to the 7th square kilometers larger than North America as a whole, you know, Canada, the United States, that whole deal. So there's quite a bit of surface area to work with on the moon, a lot of expansion opportunities, not to mention anything that's beneath the surface, lava caverns and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a good area for expansion for humanity. Well, good as in several quotes, as you'll find out later in the podcast. We talk about the challenges of going to the moon, but, you know, not the worst area for humanity to try to expand into the stars, and provides us with a lot of good resources. Not only that, but if we go to the moon first, one of the benefits is that the moon's lower gravity allows us to have launch vehicles on the moon that need significantly less thrust to get into interplanetary space than launching those same vehicles from Earth, because Earth is a big sucker and likes to pull.
Mm-hmm. That's a fact right there.
So now that we've buttered up the moon, let's talk a little bit about some challenges. The first one, obviously, is that you're in space, and humans weren't designed to survive in a vacuum very well.
No, certainly not. And that is a problem.
A little bit.
And the fact that there's no atmosphere on the moon. Not only can you not breathe, but there's this wonderful thing about the Earth's atmosphere that is seldomly appreciated as much as we should. And that's radiation absorption. And they don't got that on the moon. So where, you know, you'd go out on a nice sunny day on Earth, you get sunburn. On the moon, you'd get that extremely, extremely quickly. And you'd also get some cell damage and probably cancer as well. luckily, though, spacesuits, that's how we can accommodate that to a degree. And you're not going to get sunburn. Takes care of the UV, but as far as galactic radiation, hard solar radiation, we're still going to have issues. That's something that we can overcome just by building some sort of base structure. And what you're going to want to do is go underground for that. You're going to want about 3 to 5 meters of regolith, which is the lunar soil, between you and the surface, or between you and space. And that will pretty much take care of any radiation problem that you could ever foresee. Even a harsh solar storm, after you're 5 meters deep, you're pretty much good. As far as extremely fast-moving intergalactic radiation, though, that's also going to be protected. So when you see these beautiful pictures of these moonscapes, and you know you've got these domed structures and all these landers up on the surface of the moon, that's a beautiful thing to look at, but it's not very practical from an engineering or safety standpoint. But that's okay. Definitely not a problem.
Very true. And another thing that we need to be conscientious about going to the moon is that the Earth's atmosphere shields us from a majority of meteorites and meteors that are falling, at least the small kind. The moon doesn't have that safety barrier, so anything that is going to hit the surface is going to hit the surface, because there's nothing stopping it, nothing for it to burn up in on the way down. So any structure on the moon has got to have protection against micrometeor impacts and possibly even larger bodies, and that can cause quite a bit of a problem.
Absolutely. Same problem with the radiation. Got to get out of the direct line of fire And that is the moon's main source of erosion, is just by the meteorite impacts, and it's moving all the dust around. But cool thing about this, you know, we've been talking about how having no atmosphere is all this bad stuff, you know, radiation and meteorites, and I mean, no one wants cancer, no one wants a hole in their spacesuit through a micrometeorite or through their spacecraft or what have you. But having no atmosphere and being exposed to that direct solar radiation has given the moon an incredible benefit. And that is, it is extremely ripe with helium-3. And helium-3 is a proponent we could use for helium-3 deuterium fusion. And what that allows you to do is build a fusion reactor that does not degrade over time due to neutron radiation, because it's just it emits proton radiation when you use the helium-3 deuterium reaction. And that is, to dumb it down a little bit, that is a good thing. Low maintenance and high efficiency. Now, helium-3 on the Earth is extraordinarily rare, because most of it's came from when the Earth was being formed.
Yeah, basically. And, I mean, it's emitted by solar radiation, as I understand it, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So we probably screened that out.
Whatever wasn't trapped in the Earth when the Earth was being formed, that's where we have it right now. The rest of it's coming in from space. And the atmosphere does a really good job of not letting that come into the atmosphere or through to the surface.
It's like it doesn't want us to have any fun.
Almost. Or just give us a better goal to go to the moon, or a better reason.
Yeah, very true. So, another thing that is difficult about going to the moon is the dust. We've talked about how the regolith is able to protect you from things like radiation and micrometeors, but that dust sticks to pretty much frickin' everything. At least that's what the Apollo missions taught us, is that it just gets on all the things.
Oh yeah, it's been statically charged due to that wonderful that solar wind that we were talking about, so it has a tendency to cling to everything with the tenacity of a very clingy gecko.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to gum up, you know, any mechanical workings are going to need to be severely isolated, and air purification systems are going to be a must, because that stuff is pretty powdery, and pretty much anything that goes out on the surface is going to get coated with this stuff and have to be brushed off. It's not, you know, a super major downside, I would say, but it's certainly an annoying problem and a possibly severe engineering issue when you're trying to deal with making complex systems that are running on the moon, like a fuel refinery or something that collects the helium-3 from the surface, you know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, it's intense. Basically like little razor blades, as if you breathe that stuff in, little crystalline structures, and the low gravity on the moon, 1/6 Earth gravity, it does not help you either, because the dust will tend to float a lot longer than it would on the Earth. It's not just going to settle down quite so nicely. It'll hang around for a while, especially since it's a little bit charged electrically.
It's like horking a lung full of that pink insulation stuff they put on houses.
Yeah.
It's not good.
A little bit worse than that, even.
Yeah, not good. And then in the situation of where you're trying to generate power on the moon, a probable problem is that the moon experiences night for 354-ish hours at any point that you are on the moon, because the moon is tidally locked with Earth, and so the sun still revolves around it in a predictable pattern, but that means very, very long nights on the moon. And if your primary energy generation is something like solar energy, then you're going to be kind of out of luck when you are in the dark for 14 and a half days, give or take.
Yep. That is a considerable engineering challenge if you're designing a mission or a base that's going to be based out of anywhere but the lunar poles, essentially. There are certain places called peaks of eternal light that we found at the north and south pole of the moon, which basically on the edges of these really massive craters, since the moon's inclination ends up being just enough so that you're pretty much right on with the sun, you are just high enough that you are always in the sun. So if you stood there on that peak, you would see the sun revolve around you. That'd be pretty cool. gotta say,
we don't need you in any of an ego, you know.
Yeah, no, not that you need that. But you'd also see the Earth revolving around you too, so that would be kind of wacky.
Yep.
As far as perspective goes.
I also wrote down space creepers, but on further research, I crossed that out. It turns out that that's not an actual thing. It only exists in my worst Minecraft nightmares.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, that was a terrible lunar landing, but we survived that. Oh man.
We will survive. We will achieve.
We will. But no, you're absolutely right. Those 14 days of darkness are going to give you a lot of trouble if you're trying to stick to a purely solar system. And that's not like a space pun or anything. Gosh. But you could go the nuclear reactor route. You're going to have that as a backup no matter what, just because of the fact that it's a reliable system. You could build a solar reactor. I'm sorry. That would be cool. I don't know what that is yet. You could build a solar farm. You could build a solar farm and harvest energy double what you need for those 14 days. So basically, you get, you know, while you're getting the daylight to power your day system now, you're also getting it to power it for the night and putting it into a battery, like a rare earth element type of battery, or a regenerative hydrogen fuel cell. And that will be able to run then during the lunar nights.
Yeah, very true. So let's stop naysaying here. Let's talk about, you know, let's go back to being 10 years old, build our ideal lunar base. So there are several things you want to keep in mind when you are constructing structures on foreign planets, and that's that you need things like power, you need water, you need air, and you need shelter. And those are about the four basics. So for power, we've already kind of discussed that nuclear fission is obviously a possibility, probably not the best if you have to be hanging around the fission engine all the time, but it's, you know, not the worst. Well, it might be the worst. I don't actually know. Probably better than coal combustion. I don't know what you'd do with that.
There's no coal on the moon, unfortunately.
No, not really. It's also probably crap for energy per weight compared to nuclear. In fact, I'm certain that it is.
Oh, but absolutely.
You've got solar power, which we've discussed. And that is only limited by the fact that the moon is in darkness. At least the point where you would be stationed is in darkness for 14 and a half days straight, and then in light for 14 and a half days straight, give or take. And you'd have to have a complex battery system in order to hold the energy that you've generated during that time to meet it out during the dark hours, possibly mitigated by making a ring of solar panels around the equator of the moon, but I wouldn't even fathom to guess how much that would cost in order to do that. It might actually not be that much, but I'm pretty sure that it would cost quite a bit to move that many solar panels into orbit and then construct, you know, a belt for the moon. That probably wouldn't be the best cost-effective option.
That's a lot of solar panels. Yeah. If you had that, though, you'd have a lot of energy. No joke. You'd be well on your way to all sorts of fun things with that much energy.
Yeah, you'd just be, you know, sitting in it. Wouldn't even matter. No. All right. Next biggie.
Leave the lights on and don't care.
Yeah. Next biggie would be water. Fortunately, that's something that the moon is actually providing to us sort of in abundance. I mean, more than we thought it would, certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, when the lunar, that was the Clementine mission, I think, that first spotted it out, on the lunar poles, you got a large three micrometer return on the spectrometer. Which basically is a hydrogen source, water. So there's water on the lunar poles, and they're trapped in these things we call pits or cold traps, basically craters that are on the poles, which are eternally dark. And so they never see the light. And so you've got this wonderful layer of ice, probably mixed underneath some dust or other regolith material. And there's billions of tons of this stuff on the moon. And water is super useful for everything from life support systems to fuel cells. You can use it for fuel for your spacecraft. And it also makes a really great radiation shield, absorbs a lot of radiation. So that being there is pretty freaking awesome. The water is extremely dense. It's very expensive to carry up from the Earth. So using that in-situ resource on the moon is going to save you a lot of money. And is going to make a lunar base actually feasible. It's one of the reasons, I believe, that building a base on the poles is going to be your first best bet.
Yeah, very true. And as I understand it, and you'll have to fact check me on this one because I might be just stipulating here, but hydrogen being the most abundant element in the universe kind of impacts the moon on a regular basis. And as I remember, some of the moon's regolith or one of the other topsoils has some oxygen content as part of its buildup. So presuming that you have enough energy, you could manufacture water with those components. Am I correct?
You could. You could. The lunar 83% of the moon's surface is covered with anorthosite, which is it's a silicate. So it's got an oxide, an oxygen component. So you basically, yeah, you can get the oxygen out of the rocks, the moon rocks. And that's actually you can get that also from ilmenite, which is titanium oxide. I'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, you can get hydrogen as well, baking it out of it. It's baked into some of the rocks. They're slightly porous in the regolith. And you can get some other volatiles that way too, but thank goodness we've got water, because it would be a heck of a lot more energy intensive doing it the other way around.
Yeah. And I mean, by that same token, you can produce air, because if you can get water and you can get electricity, you can produce air, because electrolysis is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
So we're not in bad shape there. And shelter, we've discussed it a little bit. The leading, at least I'm going to call it the leading theory, is that we find a nice lava tube underneath the lunar surface and build a structure inside of that, which will provide us with the shielding that we need from the radiation and from the micrometeorites, and provide a hopefully stable structural base for which to build our structure within. And hopefully that'll provide a lot of, it'll bring down the amount of work that we need to do once we actually get there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's certainly a lot easier than bringing up a bulldozer, you know, digging into the lunar surface or piling it up over your spacecraft. But something to definitely consider, the basaltic nature of the moon. With those lava tubes, you're going to have extremely porous material. So you have to figure out a way to seal it in. You can't just have bare rock down there. It's going to leak atmosphere, and you're going to find yourself very much so out of oxygen very quickly if you don't seal it up just the right way, either using some sort of polymer or just completely enclosing it in a hard shell. But it is a great place to start for the radiation shielding, and since the hole's already there, you know, like living in a cave, it's essentially the same thing. It's a natural structure that you can take advantage of, and I think that's a very smart thing to do. Looking at it from an engineering perspective, it's going to be very difficult to safely traverse these places, but at the same time, the benefits that you get by having this pre-built structure, essentially, all you have to do is find a way for it to maintain an atmosphere inside. I think that simplifies things quite a bit. Allows you to definitely get some exploring done, for sure.
I think there's something poetic about man kind of starting over. You know, we move to a new planet, we move right back into the caves before we learn to walk on
Absolutely.
The surface like proper people.
Yeah. It's not like Minecraft where you just, you know, you build the whole house of dirt and you punch from the ground. Can't do that quite as easily.
No, not really. Life isn't easy like cubes, unfortunately.
No. Darn it.
All right, so the last thing... Oh, go ahead, man.
Fun fact, I was going to say that ilmenite, the titanium ore that we have on the moon, in quite a good abundance. Fun fact is that during the Cold War, most of our titanium, which we were using to build our SR-71 Blackbirds, was coming from, and also a host of other fun military secret technologies and whatnot, was coming from the Soviet Union. So we found ourselves in the awkward position of buying this resource from who our adversary was and then using it to spy on them and against them. And so DARPA actually had done a feasibility study of going to the moon for the exact purpose of mining the titanium ore, the ilmenite, off of the lunar surface and using that to advance our spacecraft at that point, an aircraft. That's kind of funny when you think about it, because ilmenite is going to be an extremely important resource on the moon, not only because it contains titanium, which you can use to construct things once you have the technology, but you can also use it to extract the oxygen from it, for using it for fuel or for atmosphere. Ilmenite also happens to be the element, I'm sorry, the ore, not ore, golly, the mineral, there we go, that contains the most helium-3 per anything. We don't exactly know why yet, but ilmenite has the highest concentration of helium-3 more than any other mineral that we've found on the lunar surface. And so once the helium-3 game starts off, that's going to be another good place to look besides just in the regolith on the surface.
It's because humanity rolled all 20s on their luck roll when it came to the moon. We just got the whole package. So
yeah, moon's a pretty awesome place.
So the last thing we want to talk about here about the moon in our abridged briefing, because we could seriously probably go on for about another hour on the specifics, but what would people do, you know, just in general when they were living on the moon? And obviously we've already talked about how they would be basically mission support. We would use the moon as a launch platform for future interplanetary and possibly interstellar missions because of the lower gravity. And if we had all the materials that we needed to build spacecraft on the moon, then we could potentially just use it as a port for asteroid mining and stuff. And since there's no atmospheric interference, you get a pretty decent signal out into the rest of space. So it'd probably be an ideal place for mission control that would be kind of like a better Houston, I would say.
Absolutely. And you've also, like we mentioned earlier, have that resource, the natural resources of the moon that we can use as manufacturing base. On the lunar far side, you know, the part of the moon that's always pointed away from the Earth, you could put radio telescopes out there and you could do some really great science, because the Earth, we're pretty noisy. After we learned that we can make radios, we have, in no short of period of time, completely flooded all of the bands, and so we're emanating a lot of radio radiation. That sounds odd.
radiation.
But on the far side, you've got the whole moon between you and the Earth, and so that provides a nice little shield, and so you have a little quiet bubble, a little quiet cone, if you will, which you can then listen to the vastness of space and see what it's got to hear and see what it's got to say.
Yeah, it's all very good. Science. Yeah, we'll have some great, if we can get up there, we'll have some great observatories up there that we can use to study deep space objects that we just can't see from Earth and that are difficult to try to track via current satellite technology. I mean, we'll get some great pictures is what I'm trying to say here. And absolutely. So while we were doing some research, I found this idea, and I will leave it up to the listener, and you can tell by my tone of voice what I kind of think about this. But there's also the theory that if we did the whole make a belt of solar panels around the moon, we could put a big ultra-high frequency transmitter dish on the moon, or on the Earth-facing side of the moon, and beam the energy, the excess energy that the moon is generating for us, back down to Earth for use terrestrially. I'm not super up on that plan for a variety of reasons, but it's a theory, so I figured I might as well mention it.
Yeah, I'm gonna blow that one out of the water. Okay, so it's a cool idea because you've got solar panels all around the moon. One, that's a heck of a lot of resources. Two, only 50% of those are going to be utilized at one time, essentially, because only one half the moon is facing towards the sun at a time.
Exactly.
So you're losing a lot of resources in that way. But I mean, they're orbiting, so you've got, if you're orbiting up, say they're orbiting the moon, you've got that. Okay, cool. But the thing is, if you're trying to aim all of these things and collect all the energy, send it back to the Earth, you know, the moon is constantly revolving around the Earth. So you're going to have receiver stations all over the Earth, whereas a better option would be to put a solar power satellite in geosynchronous orbit over the Earth over one place, and then beam it all down in a tight microwave beam to a rectenna farm somewhere on the Earth's surface. You know, wherever you happen to have your satellite pointing, you can beam it down. And so you can utilize a much better system, and a much easier to get to system. Geo is a little bit easier to get to than the lunar orbit. So, yeah, it's a cool idea, though. I mean, certainly interesting, But technically, I think there's a better way.
Yeah.
And a better use of resources.
I mean, not all ideas about what to do on the moon are going to be good ideas or practical ideas, but if you keep the interest flowing, you know, more people will be inclined to submit their crazy out there suggestions that just might be the way that we get there in the future. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, lunar tourism might become a thing. Who knows? I mean, you get a big bubble, you know, a big atmospheric bubble on the moon, and you fill it full of, you know, nitrogen and oxygen that you can breathe inside. You give yourself some plastic wings, and you can fly on the moon. You, on manpower, can fly on the moon due to the 1/6G. So, I mean, there's some cool things you can do on the moon, and that's that's one of the more exciting ones.
I'd say you could golf on the moon, but I think somebody already beat us to it.
We did. Oh, man, I forget which astronaut that was. But that, yeah, I'm pretty sure he knocked that sucker into an orbit.
It's the power of science. Truly
it is. But there's no doubt in my mind that the moon really, it's humanity's next best hope for advancing our technological levels and to be able to boost ourselves into a spacefaring civilization. It just provides that springboard, that bastion of resources, and it's close enough to the Earth that you could get there if something goes wrong. Mars is a really great place, but it's so darn far away. If you mess up, it's going to take you a long time to get something back there for you to help you out, and also you got the communication delay. You've got water on the moon. You've got enough material to construct a base. Oxygen is relatively plentiful. You can extract that fairly simply. Yeah, let's go to the moon.
Yep, we got to do it. Well, until then, I guess we will just keep our eyes pointed to the skies. But for now, I'm the pusher robot.
And I'm the shover robot.
And you have gone.
And you have gone down the stairs. As you know, I'm all about that space, travel. I'm all about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space.